Swift Talk Radio.
All right, so I did this Wisconsin State Fair, not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before, and had a total blast, as always, but saw some new and old musicians, like Bobby Way and the Wayouts, and found a new band, new band for me, called the Blacktop Kings. I thought that was really cool, and finished up with Pat McCurdy, which is always fun. And, of course, I had the obligatory food items, you know, cream puff, ear of corn, a large beer, followed by another large beer, and followed by lots of deep-fried, fatty stuff. But you know what I didn't see? I didn't see any politicians. No, not one. And state fairs are usually known for that sort of thing. They're prime ground for that sort of thing. I didn't see any booths in the Expo Center for the Republican or Democratic parties, and I didn't see any candidates out there glad-handing. In fact, I didn't even see the religious booths or the pro-life booths out there trying to win converts to Jesus. Maybe the fair did away with all that stuff, and hey, kudos to them if they did, but I just didn't see any. Now, contrast this with the Iowa State Fair, which happens at the same time the Wisconsin State Fair does. They get all the political candidates out there, all the politicians who have any hope for getting elected president. They go to this festival, and what are they doing? They're pandering to the Iowans, who get to decide who wins the first primary contest, which gets me to thinking, why the hell should Iowa get to decide each and every election cycle? What makes these Cornhuskers so special anyway? And New Hampshire, why do these two states always get to kick everything off? Why do they get all the say-so and we get virtually none? Can't we do, I don't know, all the primaries at once? Well, yeah, sure, we'd have the tech to pull that off, but having primaries being done one state at a time, you know, it made sense back when things moved at the speed of trains and horses, but you know, if primaries weren't done one state at a time, politicians might never visit that state and meet people, you know, glad hand for the people locally who are going to elect them. So, yeah, things have changed and sped up a great deal, but it's kind of nice to have politicians out there shaking hands and burning shoe leather. You know, so, okay, I get it. That's why we want to do everything one state at a time. But Iowa and New Hampshire, every single damn time, I'm sorry, but other states should get their say-so once in a great while. Maybe you could set up something like a lottery, you know, everybody draws from a vat to decide who goes first, who goes second, etc. Or better yet, if you're going to have the same states doing this again and again, let's just decide based on population size. That way the smallest impact gets to kick things off, followed by the next largest population, and so forth and so on. So how would that be structured? Well, going strictly by population size, the first state that would get to vote would be not Iowa, but Wyoming. Yeah, now that's a big state in terms of land mass, but it's one man, one vote, not 1 acre, one vote. So Wyoming would go first. Next would be not New Hampshire, but Vermont. Yeah, the District of Columbia isn't a state, but it should be. So if it were ever a state, then it would go next, and that would be followed by Alaska. Alaska would be the third state technically to go and vote in the primary. Then you get North and South Dakota, in that order, Delaware, then Rhode Island, Montana, and then finally New Hampshire. Iowa would end up being the 21st state to vote in the primary. And maybe that's the way it should be, you know, right in the middle, geographically, and sequentially, right? States like New York, Texas, and California, they would be the very last, and they would have the most sway with that much pull, and it could be a real contest up until the very end, because you know what? Those primaries would be at the very end. People that are in a distant third or a close second would stay in the race, giving people more choices, you know, so they might actually win out in the primaries, you know, late in the game. And that's good. And then everybody gets a say-so. And Wisconsin would still rank pretty low, 31st out of 50 states overall, but at least we have the satisfaction of knowing that we had a voice. For once. Right? All right. Let's do our silly Christian music sampler here to start the show.
A mystery. Why?
right, enough of that shit. Swift Radio presents the Sacred Cow First House. Greetings to all you fine ladies, extraordinary gentlemen, gifted youngsters, and exceptionally talented household pets. This is the Swift Radio Hour for Monday, August, 24th, 2015. I'm your host, Eric J. Hildeman, and here you'll be challenged by logic and critical thinking as you learn how to make being sacrilegious into a true art form. We are the official radio show and podcast of Swift, which stands for the Southeast Wisconsin Freethinkers, the largest and oldest group of atheists and agnostics in the greater Milwaukee area. Be sure to check out our website at www.swiftnow.org. This podcast is being recorded live from the Iowa State Fair, where we have just taken a ride inside Donald Trump's helicopter. Actually, no. It's being recorded live in Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pre-recorded live in Greenfield, Wisconsin, the land that time forgot. You can access our podcast at our permanent home and archive at sacredcowfirsthouse.podomatic.com. There you'll find every episode permanently available. You can subscribe via iTunes, access it on Google Play, or download the Podomatic app. Quick disclaimer, opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily those of the Southeast Wisconsin Freethinkers, its members, or its affiliate organizations. So, for example, if I say that Donald Trump continuing to lead in the polls is the worst nightmare for the Republican Party and the greatest gift to democracy in America, that would not be an official position of the group. Swift is an organization open to all ethnicities, creeds, and viewpoints, even conservatives. Here we got myself in the studio. We have Isabella Cat, who has been very talkative lately. You might hear her as this podcast goes on. And, of course, Muhammad the Teddy Bear is here. And our silly Christian music sampler to open the show was King's Ransom by the group Petra. Petra is, of course, an institution within modern Christian music. It's produced some of the best gospel rock ever recorded, but, of course, it's also produced some of the worst ever recorded. King's Ransom is not the best example of either of these, but it's one of the most memorable, and that's why I chose it for this week's silly Christian music segment. Here's some announcements. We've got our weekly Friday Free Thought Fitness Walk and Talk every week, every Friday, located at Greenfield Park at 9 a.m. This has gotten pretty popular, and you end up exercising your mind as well as your body. Now, our next Swift meeting, then, will be Sunday, September 13th at 11 a.m. at the Chase Bank in Cudahy, located on the corner of Layton and Packard Avenue. And, oh, finally, we're coming up on the Myth Information 2 conference. Yes, Mythicist Milwaukee's at it again. There's going to be an encore convention because everybody loved the first one so much. That's going to be on Sunday, September 27th, going from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. They'll have Killa Priest from the Wu-Tang Clan. The founder and president of Black Nonvaliers, Mandisa Thomas, will be there. And authors David Fitzgerald and Arthur George will also be present. Well, that's it for the announcements, and what an interesting couple of weeks it's been in the news. I mean, holy shit. The first Republican presidential debate took place a few weeks ago, and that the clear winner was, well, nobody in particular, but it was certainly the Donald Trump show from start to finish. I mean, say what you will about that loudmouth son of a bitch, but he does make things interesting, especially that part during the debate when his hairpiece stood up and said, "Mana, mana." Oh, come on. Okay. Hey, did you hear, speaking of phenomena, Sesame Street, it's moving to HBO. Yeah, that's right. Your one-stop shop for pornography, also The Sopranos and Game of Thrones, is now hosting the longest-running children's television program franchise. It's not going away from PBS. PBS will still be airing it. They'll still be airing past episodes, and they'll still get to air the new episodes 9 months later. But HBO gets first dibs. Now, okay, this isn't the first time HBO has done children's television. I mean, we all remember Fraggle Rock, right? But now, HBO is doing not just Muppets, but the granddaddy of the Muppets. Wow. Hey, maybe we'll finally get to see Kermit and Miss Piggy doing it. No! No, wait, we can't, because Kermit and Miss Piggy broke up. Yeah, they made it official. The Kurgi is no more. Yeah. Of course, that's largely because Frank Oz can't hang around with Jim Henson anymore, but that's beside the point. Besides, we saw something like that on Crank Yankers years ago. Oh, wait, I'm still wrong, because Miss Piggy isn't a member of the Sesame Street cast. Kermit the Frog is, but only when he's a roving reporter. Okay, in this corner we have HBO, which now controls Sesame Street, and in the other corner we have Disney, which holds rights to the Muppets. Which fighter will gain supremacy? Let us see. Ding, ding. No. Okay. Let us see what's new. Yes! Lettuce. Lettuce is what's new. Yeah, that's right. They grew a crop of lettuce on board the International Space Station. Yeah. See, this paves the way for a new wave of interplanetary hydroponics, which could sustain the human race during interstellar travel. Of course, with the ISS crew now eating homegrown lettuce as part of their daily diet, they're having to deal with everyone having a lot more gas, something which is very much a serious problem inside the limited space of a space station. It's like an overgrown elevator in there. And we know how bad farts can be inside in one of those, don't we, right? Okay. Oh, actress Ariel Winter has created a bit of a stir by having a breast reduction surgery. Oh, now, okay, I'll be honest. I never watched the television show Modern Family, and so I'd never heard of this actress until the news story broke. So I looked into it, and I found this is a bit of an interesting news story, not just for the breast factor. Ariel is now 17, and she developed apparently suddenly into 32F cup size when she hit 16, which caused her a lot of back pain and discomfort, and she didn't like the attention she got from men working on the set. So she got a breast reduction and went down to a 34D, and she says she feels great. Now, here's the part of the story I don't understand, because the number is supposed to be a chest measurement, and then the cup size is supposed to be the breast mass, more or less. So how can she go from a chest size 32, cup size F, to a chest size 34, cup size D? How do you go down in cup size and go up in chest size measurement? I don't get that. That doesn't make sense. Maybe her discomfort came from the fact that she never had a bra that fit right. I took a look at the before and after photos on the internet, and you probably will too after this, but I gotta say, I don't see the F-cup thing in the before photo. In fact, the before photo, yeah, she looks top-heavy, but she looks like she's trying to tie her breasts down or something. Maybe that was the problem, I don't know. And it's not like it was a situation like Salil Moonfry. Do you remember Salil Moonfry? If you don't, let me remind you. She was Punky Brewster back in the 1980s. Yeah. She hit puberty, and her breasts went, like, way overboard. In fact, they nicknamed her Punky Boobster. You know, she would have been one of these, you know, women with, you know, yeah, like, it would be her and the girls, you know, just way out there. So, I could see why Celine Moonfry needed a breast reduction, sure. That made perfect sense for her. But Ariel Winter? I'm not sure about the measurements in the, and in the before and the after photos. In the after photos, Ariel looks more proportionate, and is definitely prouder, okay, and that's good. But she also looks like she got a ribcage reduction along with a breast reduction. Can they do that? I don't know. Anyway, large breasts are apparently disappearing in Hollywood all over the place, it seems. I mean, not too long ago, you might remember this news story, Angelina Jolie, she had a double mastectomy in order to prevent her from getting breast cancer. Wow. You know what? Pretty soon, the only oversized boobs on television are going to be the ones in the Republican debates. Yeah. And in case you're wondering, that whole news story was one big lead-up to that joke. Right. Oh, yes. Jon Stewart. He aired his final episode of The Daily Show. Oh, what a sad passing. And I, of course, watched it a long time after everyone else did. But I did watch it eventually, and all I can say is that it was pretty obvious early on that they were going to bring on every last cast member who ever shared the stage with Jon Stewart at any point, and really, after the 10th or 12th cast member rejoining the set for one last hurrah, did John really have to look surprised? I mean, shit, John, quit acting surprised when you see another one you haven't seen on your show in 12 years. I mean, that's the theme. We're not surprised. Why should you be? Anyway, still, it was a pretty good farewell. I mean, John bade us debunk the bullshit one last time and then danced off into the sunset, literally, with Bruce Springsteen playing rock and roll in the background. And, well, it was a good run. I look forward to seeing what John ends up doing next. I really, really do. And Trevor Noah, well, we'll see if he's got some very big shoes to fill, but we'll see. Oh, hey, Billy Joel and his new wife, Alexis, welcomed a new baby girl last week Wednesday. The birth came nearly 2 months after the couple married. Wow. Talk about a shotgun wedding, right? Della Rose Joel. She entered the world at 7 pounds, 6.5 ounces. And she's now the little sister to Alexa Ray Joel, who is 29. 29. Yeah. The daughter of Billy and supermodel Christie Brinkley. Damn, it's good to be a rock star. And finally, okay, Kathy Lee Gifford is... Kathy Lee Gifford, yeah, whatever. All right, well, we're going to do an Ask Eric segment. Whenever we do an Ask Eric segment, we've got our Ask Eric message here that we're going to do, so...
Message for you, sir.
Yeah, here we are. Okay, we got a couple of questions here. First one, hey, Eric, what's the deal with Donald Trump? This from a friend on Facebook. Actually, it's signed... it's signed Alexa Ray Joel. No, I'm kidding. It's yeah, what about Donald Trump? That's a weird one. I mean, if ever there were a no-brainer regarding a presidential candidate, this is it. Trump is an arrogant fat cat asshole, and he makes no bones about it. I mean, everyone with a brain pretty much regards him as a joke, and yet he keeps sticking around in the polls. I mean, and leading in the polls, which is nuts. I think it was on this podcast that I poo-pooed the whole Trump thing when he was polling at 12%. I said he'd never make 15. Well, he made 15. Then I said he'd never make 20%. Well, he made 20%. Then I said he'd never make 25%. He made that. You know what? Two things. One, I think this is because conservatives who have been indoctrinated by talk radio over the last 20 years, they've finally been conditioned to the point that they'll side with any wealthy, strong-willed candidate who says he'll get things done for conservative values. Everything coming out of Trump's mouth sounds just like the rhetoric we've been hearing from people like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity for years. And now, this segment of the electorate, this Tea Party Republican base, has been so thoroughly brainwashed that they're susceptible to just this sort of nonsense candidate. For years they've been force-fed the Kool-Aid and force-fed the Kool-Aid and force-fed the Kool-Aid, and now they've finally found their Jim Jones. And what's funny is that the very conservatives who spent all this money, who bought up all the airwaves and dumped billions of dollars into building up this huge conservative media machine, they've had that huge machine backfire on them now. The Fox News people tried to demonize Trump, and viewers threatened to turn them off. And their high ratings claim has been the only thing that kept them on the air. So now they're stuck with Trump, apparently for the long haul. And even if somehow the conservative, empire manages to dislodge him as the front runner, he'll probably run as an independent and act as a spoiler. This is a dream come true for Democrats, and it's an absolute nightmare for Republicans. Trump is the Frankenstein monster of News Corp and Clear Channel. And what can I say? They've had it coming. Oh yeah, and my second major point is simply this. Trump's a clear-cut racist. He proved it with the first thing that came out of his mouth, calling illegals crossing the Mexican border criminals and rapists. And so for all the people who so vehemently opposed Obama but insisted over and over again they weren't being racist about it, they have now been proved wrong. Here is the big, fat, bluntly racist candidate, and he's leading in the polls. And you say you weren't a racist in hating Obama? Guess what? You just outed yourself. You were and are a racist because you wanted to undermine the first black president, probably so that you could have a chance at supplanting his legacy with the first black conservative president. You put conservative ahead of racial equality, and that is racist. And now you're for Trump. Congratulations, you're definitely a racist. And I'll bet you weren't even conscious of it. But you are now. You've run out of excuses. Trump's leading in the polls, sure, but wait until the candidates start dropping out and endorsing other candidates. You can bet Jeb Bush is going to get most or all of those endorsements, and Trump's 25% will probably hold right there. Okay, I've been wrong about those predictions before, but he seems to be holding at 25%. I think it's going to stay right around there. Oh, and here's something to put your mind at ease. Republicans are about, 30% of the population. Donald Trump polls at around registered Republicans at 25%. So that's 25% or one-fourth of 30%. So that brings it down to only 7.5% roughly of our nation who likes Donald Trump. Honestly, that's about the same percentage of people who believed we never landed on the moon. So, yeah, you can make about 6% of people believe anything. So here's another one kind of related to it. Oh, and that means that I've got to do another...
Message for you, son.
Hey, Eric, what do you think of Bernie Sanders? Yeah, I like Bernie. He's out there getting people fired up. And he's saying all the right things, and he's got an impressive track record, but I'll tell you, Hillary's still my first choice, because it's a post-Citizens United political landscape, and that means we need the candidate who's going to get up the big corporate money, or else we'll probably never win. And I know what you'll say. I know what you'll say about her. You'll say that Hillary's shifty, that she's an insider, that she's ruthless. Good. That's what I want. Because we watched Obama get lynched for 7 years, and I'm done playing nice. Yeah. And Bernie? Bernie? Okay. Well, he's got some knocks against him. He'll never get the kind of money to seriously challenge Jeb Bush, who's currently pulling down all the corporate donors. He'll be lucky to even get a tenth of that amount, if that. Also, for most of his political career, Bernie's called himself a socialist, and socialist is still a word which has a real stigma attached to it. Yes, he calls himself a democratic socialist now, and we all know, at least those of us who listen to this show, that that doesn't mean he wants an end to capitalism as such, but a lot of people are just not going to understand that. The inertia that's left over from the McCarthy era, it hasn't died out yet. And finally, Bernie's Jewish. No, I don't have a problem with that. Neither should you. But when they attack Bernie for being a non-Christian, and they will, trust me, they will, the charge, for once, will be 100% correct. Say you what you will about Obama, but he is a true Christian. And not a Muslim. And the same goes for Hillary. Hillary is a, her Episcopalian faith is very dear to her. But the claim this time that you're supporting somebody that isn't a supporter of Jesus Christ, yeah, that will cost him if Bernie ends up being the Democratic nominee for this election cycle. So that's my take. If Bernie's the nominee, hey, he has my full support. But he's not my first choice, and I understand some people have him as their first choice for exactly the reasons I've just outlined. Great. I have no problem with that. It's just like in 2008, we have two outstanding candidates for president, and the Republicans can't even find one among the 16 people or so that have declared. And Trump is likely to ruin the whole thing. I like our chances. I really do. So, if you got a question you'd like to ask an atheist, go ahead and write me. You can email me at carlsaganjr@aol.com. Make sure to put Ask an Atheist in the subject line. You can also reach me on Twitter. My Twitter name is @SaganJr. Or just simply find me on Facebook under my plain old name of Eric Hildeman. Seems to be where I'm getting most of my questions these days. It's time for an episode of the Stupid Files. Whoops, that's the wrong name. Dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun.
Oh, there we go.
Dum 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 dum.
The Stupid Files, the continuing story of intrepid investigator Thomas Munday, who finds examples of such stupidity, it's criminal. If only being this big a moron were somehow against the law.
Dum 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 dum.
This week, Detective Munday travels to Africa, where an act of monumental stupidity recently occurred. Cecil the Lion, a protected animal living on designated parkland, was shot and killed by an American dentist named Walter Palmer. While this is stupid enough in its own right, the stupidity Detective Munday discovered was not in the actual act of shooting a lion. Rather, the real stupidity lies in everyone's reaction to it, and how demonizing Walter Palmer... Nobody is bothering to demonize the real criminals in this story, namely the purported guides who bilked the dentist for $50,000 and then assured him that he wasn't breaking the law.
Dun, 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 dun.
The two guides Walter Palmer was the victim of were Theo Bronckhorst, a professional hunter and so-called honest Trymor Ndlovu, both from Zimbabwe. They were arrested on poaching charges, but were inexplicably allowed to be released on bail shortly afterward. Unlike Walter Palmer, they are not constantly hounded by reporters or angry environmentalists, even though they, and not the American dentist, are the true murderers of Cecil the Lion.
Dum, 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 dum.
Many think that hunting for animals for sport is stupid and silly, but hunters have an important role to play in sustaining the health of any ecosystem, and the lack of adequate hunters can sometimes be a problem. In the state of Wisconsin, chronic wasting disease was ravaging the deer population, and only the sustained efforts of hunters could have thinned the herd enough to halt the progression of the epidemic. And while it may seem silly for hunters using modern weapons to display their kills on Facebook photos with undue pride, it must be said that our society grew out of a hunter-gatherer society. We still have a hunting need to fulfill, and we do so vicariously through our jobs or through games. But for some, this isn't enough, and so they revert to the old ways of our distant ancestors. If dentists displaying trophies of dead animals is stupid, then how much more stupid is it to get swept up in the tribalism of a football game, or waste one's life away playing Call of Duty? And who are we to complain about posing for pictures with dead animals while we dine on our bulk-farmed chicken McNuggets and bacon cheeseburgers?
Dum, 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 dum.
But the stupidity doesn't end there, because as many observers have pointed out, the travesty of Cecil the Lion illustrates how skewed our outrage priorities are. As we demonstrate such immense shock and sadness over one lion in Africa getting killed, and show little to no compassion about a black child shot by a gang member here at home.
Dum, 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 dum.
This kind of stupidity seems ingrained within our media as major news items are prioritized, not by relevance or importance, but by rarity and flashiness. Thus it is that when thousands of Koreans are killed by a dictator, we don't bat an eyelash. But when one Malaysian Airlines plane goes down, the media seems to cover nothing else. When wives are killed by domestic violence, we tend not to care, until the one doing the killing is an Olympian such as Oscar Pistorius. While women's rights get trampled on, we champion the rights of Caitlyn Jenner, who isn't even a woman. We like to think of ourselves as sophisticated and civilized, but the sad truth is, we are still just animals, easily distracted by shiny trinkets.
Dum, 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 dum.
Yes, the loss of Cecil the Lion is a tragedy, but so also is the loss of Cecil the Janitor, Cecil the Fast Food Worker, or Cecil the Hobo. And there are hunters killing them off every day, not even giving them the benefit of a clean, quick death with a rifle, but slowly grinding them up under the millstone of poverty. At least Cecil the Lion will have his head mounted on a wall. The ones that are hunted down and killed by corporate fat cats won't even get that memorial. And that concludes this week's Stupid Files.
Dum, 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 dum.
All right, well, that's interesting. I'm glad to say that my new fish barrel sound effects are continuing to pile up, and I'm getting very anxious to use them, you know, so as those things continue, you know, as the fish barrel news segments continue to work their way around, you'll find that I'll have, you know, more interesting things to... Uh-oh. He's back. Ah, crap. Okay, I guess I better answer this. All right, here we go. Hello, you're on the Sacred Calvarist House.
Oh, Eric.
Uh-huh.
It's me.
Yep.
I'm back.
Yeah, you are. Hi, past Eric. Yeah.
Well, hello, future Eric.
Okay.
You know why I'm calling this time?
You want to torture me with something ridiculous you read in a book by Lester Summerall?
There's no need to be cynical.
Oh, okay. You
know? I'm actually helping you out this time.
Yeah? How?
Well, I'm responding to your hell versus no hell challenge.
Oh, yeah, the hell versus no hell thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, well, for those of you out there who aren't aware, the hell versus
wait,
no
wait,
hell...
Wait, what do you mean for those of you who aren't aware?
Wait,
you're doing that podcast thing again, aren't you?
Well, yeah, you're on the air.
Oh, okay, fine.
Right. Okay, anyway, the Hell versus No Hell Challenge is where I list off a bunch of names, and my past religious self over in Bible college will answer me as to whether or not that person will have wound up in heaven or hell. And I challenged my past self with this because I think there are some interesting candidates who upset the apple cart about the whole eternal punishment thing. You know?
And I responded that I think you're just trying to rock the boat.
Rock the... Dude, the boat already sank. I'm just making you aware of it, right?
Well, I beg to differ, all right.
All right. Well, there are certain rules that I have to follow. For example, nothing really off the wall, okay? The names have to be recognized by both of us, and they have to be people who have already died. So, we're about to get started. Past Eric, are you ready?
I think I'm ready for you, future Eric.
Uh-huh.
No, really. Do your worst.
Okay. Well, here we go. All right?
Okay.
Okay. Thomas de Torquemada.
You mean the Spanish Inquisition guy?
That's the one.
Yeah, he did some pretty evil stuff torturing people like that.
Yep.
But, you know, even though what he did was evil and he was genuinely trying to save... He was genuinely trying to save souls, and he did believe in the saving blood of Jesus, so it's pretty clear to me that he would go to heaven.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not.
He's probably, like, one of the most evil people in the history of the human race. I mean, you're saying he'd go to heaven.
Well, that's what the scriptures teach us.
I've got a thought or two about what you can do with those scriptures.
Hey.
Well, okay, sorry.
Oh, yeah, well, you admitted that you still study the scriptures, too, so don't go pretending that you disrespect them.
Oh, fine, point taken. Okay, so here's another one, right?
Okay.
Mahatma Gandhi.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
It is?
Yeah, I mean, he was pretty much a Hindu, and he said so, but... Well, he also did a lot of really good things.
Yeah.
And he was inspired by the teachings of Jesus.
Yeah, indeed he was.
In fact, he said something like that he was a Hindu and a Christian and a Muslim, didn't he?
Well, that's what the historians tell us, yeah.
So that means he was kind of a universalist, and that's dubious, but I guess I'd have to say that comes close enough to believing in Jesus Christ. So I'd say he gets into heaven.
No.
By the skin of his teeth, mind
you. Oh, for Pete's sake.
No, really.
Okay, here's another.
All right, go.
Mother Teresa.
Oh, that one's a no-brainer. She's going to heaven.
You're kidding.
No. I mean, why would I be kidding? She fed thousands of starving children.
And denied them the contraceptive care that would have made her health permanent, thus creating an endless cycle of poverty which she exploited.
Oh, come on. I mean, how can you argue with all the good she did? I mean, she built lots of hospitals to care for the poor and the sick, didn't she?
Well, yeah, and didn't staff them with any medicines or doctors.
Huh?
She only staffed them with nuns like herself who would give them beds to lie down on and die slowly. Do you really know anything about her? I mean, Christopher Hitchens called her the Ghoul of Calcutta.
Who's Christopher Hitchens?
Oh, right, you wouldn't have heard about him yet.
Well, yeah, look, she was a nun, she believed in Jesus, she went to heaven, okay?
Okay.
End of story.
Fine. You ready for another one?
Shoot.
All right. Jim Baker.
Jim Baker's not dead.
Yes, Well, he's dead in my time.
He is?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Sorry about the bad news.
Oh, well, no problem, I guess.
But, hell or no hell?
Well, no doubt he was a bad huckster, but nobody questioned his faith in God, so I'd say heaven, yeah.
Okay.
What?
Nothing. You ready for another one?
Sure.
Adolf Hitler.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really tough because, I mean, was Adolf Hitler a Christian or not?
Yeah, historians still aren't sure about that one.
Right. Well, I'm no expert, but... Given that he, you know, really was a genocidal jerk, and his love of Norse paganism was well known, well, you know, the whole Ring of the Nibelungen thing with Wagner and all.
Right.
No, I don't think he made it, but I could be wrong.
How could you be wrong?
Well, he could have cried out to Jesus at the very end, I suppose.
Do you think that's likely?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
Well, to be honest, I kind of hope he didn't.
Yeah, tell me about it. Okay, ready for another?
Hit me.
Carl Sagan.
Oh, yeah, the astronomy guy.
That's the one.
Yeah, billions and billions of stars in the universe.
Yep.
Yeah, also not dead.
Well, he's dead in my... Okay, maybe we should have thought through some of the rules a bit better. Yeah.
You think?
Right. But getting back to it, hell or no hell?
Oh, he's going to hell.
You're kidding.
Well, yeah, he's going to fry, man.
Well, how can you even say that? I mean, he was one of the best people in the world. Most
yeah,
good
but
people.
A scientist Jew, I'm telling you, he's barbecued.
You're nuts. Hell, I was nuts. The whole thing is nuts. I mean...
Hey, it's your challenge, man. If you don't like it, it's not my fault.
Well, yeah, but it's your belief system, and that's certainly your fault. I mean, how could I ever have been so dumb as to believe this shit?
Well, according to you, I'm destined to become an atheist anyway, so why do you care?
Parallel universes, remember?
Right. Okay, fine. Give me another.
You sure?
Yeah, come on.
You're really not going to like this one.
Try me.
Okay. You ready?
Ready.
Our cousin Russell.
What?
Yeah.
What? That's not fair.
It's totally fair. Why wouldn't it be fair? Cousin Russell's dead.
Yeah, but...
But nothing. Hell or heaven? Come on.
Well, maybe some part of him believed.
We know better than that. Come on, Russell was all about drugs and sex and rock and roll.
Well, that doesn't mean he was an atheist or anything.
Do you need to be an atheist to go to hell?
Well, no.
Well, then which is it?
Well, yeah, probably hell, but...
And probably hell? Now, do you really think he deserved that?
No.
Well, all right then. Your belief system is therefore unjust and
well,
wrong.
Well, look, we really don't know if Russell is in hell or anything.
Well, that's true.
I mean, I'm sure God had some special plan for him and that he ended up eternally with Jesus.
Whatever you say, man.
You don't have to be a jerk about it.
I'm not being a... Look, what do you want me to say?
I'm not... Okay, just give me another one, okay?
Another one?
Yeah. My faith is up to the challenge, and I'm going to show you that you can't rattle me. Come on, do you have one more?
Yeah.
All right, then. Let's have it.
Okay. Aborted fetuses.
What?
Sure. Well, come on. They all go to heaven, right?
That's not the... Look, I know what you're up to with this, all right?
You do?
Yeah, that's right. You're not being honest about any of this.
No?
Your whole point was to simply make a mockery and a sham out of what I believe. Well, I won't stand for it.
I wasn't mocking...
You know what's going to hell? I'll tell you what's going to hell. This stupid little challenge of yours. That's what. In fact, it can go to hell right now.
Oh, wow. I think I pissed him off. All right. Well, time to go to the fish barrel. And that means that I get to do a lot more of my, you know, fish barrel quotes here. And sound effects that I was starting to tell you about before. Like this one.
This is the candiru. A parasite of fish gills. For the catfish, there is nowhere to hide. A trail of urea and ammonia streams from its gills. The candiru simply swims in circles until it picks up the scent. The signal becomes stronger as the fish approaches. It slips inside unnoticed. Spines on the candiru's head gaff the fish, securing it as it sucks blood from the gills. The worst that can happen to a parasite is to end up in the wrong host. The worst that can happen to a human is to become the wrong host to a candiru. Urinating in the water is unwise. The same cues of current and urea lure the candiru deep inside.
Well, okay. You know, if you haven't heard of the candiru before, you gotta feel bad for the poor guy who was, you know, urinating in the water in the Amazon, which is, like the narrator said, not smart, but yeah. Anyway, that was a fish thing. This time it wasn't, you know, shooting fish in a barrel. It was the fish shooting you in the, wherever. Anyway, here's a news story. This Christian minister doesn't believe in God, and she... Yes, female minister, is not the only one. Just 1 year after Reverend Greta Vosper was ordained by the United Church of Canada, taking a vow that God was Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, she stopped believing altogether. It was 1994, and Vosper's young daughter Hazel's favorite teacher had just died from a brain tumor. Hazel was devastated and furious at her mother, who had recently taught her in Sunday school that if you prayed the right way every day, God would answer and could heal. Well, clearly it hadn't worked. I was so humiliated that I had actually said that, and Hazel felt her teacher hadn't gotten well because she hadn't prayed properly. This, according to Vosper, age 57, as she told Vice News from her West Hill United Church congregation outside Toronto. When I heard that coming from her, I realized that it was abhorrent a thing to suggest. For the next few years, Vosper kept her doubts under wraps and went on to lead a large congregation, but a few years later, she cracked. One Sunday in 2001, she stood up in front of her congregation as usual, but instead of a normal sermon, she declared that she no longer believed in God. "Something came over me and I took God apart," she recalled. "I said I didn't believe in an interventionist God, not that God was a being. I don't believe in supernatural powers or heaven or hell. My understanding of God is more about relationships with oneself, the others, and the planet." Much to her surprise, neither the congregation nor the church board were bothered by this. Many even confessed that they, too, had their doubts, and so they carried on, without God. But now the church's top brass say they've received too many complaints about Vosper and have launched an unprecedented investigation to determine whether she's fit to keep her job. Vosper is appealing the church's general secretary decree issued in May that lays out a plan to kick her out, also known as defrocking. Both sides have lawyered up for an ecclesiastical court hearing slated for September. It's a surprising turn of events, especially since the United Church is known for its progressive views about who can join the fold and who can lead. It was one of the first to welcome women and LGBTQ folks to the cloth. Vosper says she's going to fight to keep her job in the church, not only because she loves the community, but also to stand up for her many colleagues she says also don't believe, but are too scared to admit it openly. "I won't bow out, because if I leave, that ruling stands and my colleagues are at risk. It's like I'd be running to safety and everyone else gets blown up," she said. Vosper's saga couldn't have come at a worse time for the United Church, which is already hemorrhaging devotees. Its membership has shrunk more than 60% since 1965, when it included more than 1 million. And across Canada, the number of people who say they aren't affiliated with any religion, known in academic circles as religious nuns, has risen from 10% in 1985 to more than 25% today. "Our numbers are at an all-time low. Finances are at rock bottom. We're closing one church a week on average, so there's a lot of stuff happening with institutional insecurity," said Vosper. But she says the church's biggest advocate, and will do whatever it takes to keep her doors open. It wasn't until 2013 that Vosper actually started calling herself an atheist. At that time, there were 4 Bangladeshi bloggers who had been arrested for not believing in God. "I decided that as a mark of my solidarity with those people who are being oppressed and denied their human rights, I would become an atheist alongside them," she said. And by doing so, she thought that it would encourage many other colleagues in the church who also do not believe in a theistic God to use that word. "But that hasn't really worked," she said. "I think that's because the word atheist is so packed with a lot of negative things. It's almost equated with being a Satanist." Vosper knows many might find the idea of an atheist minister confusing, even impossible. After taking an early retirement from his role as lead minister with the Metropolitan Church in London, Ontario, Bob Ripley realized that he was an atheist and went public with it in 2014. But unlike Vosper, he chose not to fight the church on it and gave up his status as a minister with the church. "I couldn't put the two together," Ripley told Vice News. "People who no longer believe in a supernatural divinity have every right to do so. They can and should form their own communities. But to do it under the umbrella of a Christian denomination, I just can't go there." He added that Vosper's fight is not an issue of justice or of inclusiveness. "I think the church has to give some definition to what it is, which is people who believe in supernatural divinity. That's what gives it its substance," he said. While Ripley and Vosper disagree that atheism and Christian ministry can be reconciled, they both told Vice News about a large group of closeted clergy within the United Church and beyond who struggle with or question their beliefs but are petrified to speak about it openly. Ripley and Vosper work with the Clergy Project, an anonymous online community for former and current clergy members who are doubting their faith or no longer believe in God. Since it started in 2011 with 52 members, it has grown to more than 660 from congregations around the world. 660, not 666? Damn. Okay. Through the Florida-based site, members can discuss their challenges and even access grants to help them transition into a secular life. Terry Plank, the president of the Clergy Project's board of directors, who left his ministry in California 35 years ago, told Vice News that it can be daunting for religious leaders to come clean once they stop believing. Many could lose their job, their family, and be shunned by the only community they ever knew. Plank said that there has likely been, always, non-believing members of the clergy, and it's not necessarily a new phenomenon. But things are changing because there are new tools that allow them to connect with each other for the first time. The exposure of the underbelly of the church, as I like to call it, is much greater now because of the internet. So now a pastor or religious leader struggling with this is no longer isolated. There's a whole community out there. He added that there seems to be a strong trend toward secular congregational life and points to the newly formed atheist churches, such as the Sunday Assembly, which was started in 2013 by two comedians from the UK. Vosper sees her fight as the latest battle for full equality in the United Church. She is hopeful that she will be successful, like the women and the LGBTQ clergy before her who had to overcome barriers to be accepted. I'm betting on the United Church of Canada being the first denomination to have the courage to step beyond doctrinal boundaries and say we are a church that is about love, compassion, and justice, she said. I don't believe the United Church has the chutzpah to do this. All right, so here's another story. Okay, this one from Ring of Fire Radio.
In the remote coral reefs, marine biologists sometimes use dynamite. For the purpose of scientific study, it is the only method for taking a census of all the varieties in an area. For every 10 fish killed, only one or two float to the surface. The rest sink with injured air bladders, and only divers can collect them all. On the bottom, we swim into a tragic scene.
Yeah, okay, that, believe it or not, was Jacques Cousteau in his undersea adventures, and yeah, who knew that they went dynamite fishing for science? Go figure. And as I said earlier, this from Ring of Fire Radio, the demise of corporate media and the rise of social media, out with the old, in with the new, as the mainstream corporate media is being lowered into its grave, a vibrant new citizens media has been rising to take its place. Web-based news and commentary programs are now providing quality, hard-hitting journalism in the tradition of Edward Murrow and Walter Cronkite, rapidly replacing the corporate BS known as infotainment. One of the pioneers of the new progressive media was featured recently on the UK Independent. Cenk Uygur, host and founder of The Young Turks, got started in 2002. Today, his nightly programs racked up 2 billion views on YouTube, and according to Uygur, commands an audience of 75 million. The rise of alternative progressive media is an inevitable backlash to radio and television news that for years has been heavily slanted towards conservative right-wing news when it bothers to present news at all. Between the demise of the fairness doctrine and the corporate takeover of the airwaves, there was little to no room for any dissenting voices. Many still remember Air America, a noble but ultimately doomed attempt to provide a platform for progressive alternatives to Limbaugh and Hannity. Between 2004 and 2010, Air America was the radio home of Tom Hartman, Ed Schultz, Randy Rhodes, Sam Cedar, and Ring of Fire, among many others. The causes of Air America's demise were documented in a 2010 story published in the New York Daily News. Although Air America itself was ultimately a failure, it proved that there was an audience for liberal talk radio. It was out of the ashes of Air America that the new web and social media-based progressive media was born. Newer and better web streaming technologies and platforms, such as YouTube, have enabled progressive and liberal voices to mount a serious challenge to the mainstream corporate media, which, as a result, is quickly going out of business. Taking their cues from Cenk Uygur's success, many former Air America shows, such as Hartman, Schultz, Cedar, and Ring of Fire, have made the move to the World Wide Web. The Internet is proving to be the most open and democratic media platform ever developed, much to the chagrin of Comcast and other dying corporate media giants. These companies have been doing their level best to silence progressive voices by changing formats, closing radio stations, and even firing popular hosts who won't toe the corporate line. In the end, it doesn't work. Those voices simply moved to the web, promoted by fans on secular media sites, and attracting increasing numbers of listeners who are abandoning the airwaves for internet-based news outlets. The rise of progressive media has proven two things. One, there is a huge and growing audience for progressive news and analysis. And two, when the game isn't rigged, the free market system works amazingly well. A business that gives people what they want is a thriving business. It's a lesson that Fox has failed to grasp and that MSNBC, CNN, and others are quickly forgetting. All right, well, time to go to another one here. And, well, this time I want to go to something new as, well, here we go.
500 yards up to the next dam, there's going to be in excess of 10,000 fish. And yes, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. But you know what? I love shooting fish. I don't care if I'm shooting them in a river, in a lake, during the day, at night. I don't care if they're in a barrel. I'm going to shoot fish.
All right. This from If You Only News. Germany is now offering free tuition to American students. Wow, I'd better brush up on my Deutschsprache. Germany made headlines a few weeks back when it had the unmitigated gall to condemn its student population to a life of non-ramen noodles, non-debt, when it abolished college tuition fees. But now, you can really blast that techno music, as it seems all German universities are free to Americans as well. But before American kids start pretending to give a crap about Oktoberfest and minoring in David Hasselhoff, they must learn German in order to attend. As long as it's not 1939 to 1945 German, that's one hell of a deal, you know. Last week, the final German state, that's Länder, to charge tuition ended the practice, allowing all income groups a shot at bettering themselves without the onerous burden of spirit-crushing debt. According to Dorothy Stapelfeld, a Hamburg senator, tuition fees were simply unjust. I guess Dorothy Stapelfeld is German for corporations are not people. Tuition fees discourage young people who do not have a traditional academic family background from taking up study. It is a core task of politics to ensure that young women and men can study with a high-quality standard free of charge in Germany, said Stapelfeld. It should probably be noted that Germany offered free tuition until 2006. That move triggered so much rancor that German states began abolishing the policy. In America, school kids can get murdered and the policies don't budge. Yeah, figure that. How Germany funds its education is quite different from the U.S. Just in case you are curious as to how Germany can offer free tuition, it's crucial to understand how Germany funds its education. From theconversation.com, first, Germany is a federal country with 16 autonomous states responsible for education, higher education, and cultural affairs. Second, the German higher education system, consisting of 379 higher education institutions with about 2.4 million students, is a public system which is publicly funded. There are a number of small private institutions, but they enroll less than 5% of the total student body. Meanwhile, America has the most expensive education on the planet, and the average student debt is upwards of $29,000. That state funding in 2011 and 2012 for public universities in America dropped by a whopping 7.6% explains why so many students have to borrow in the first place. Even in low-cost tuition countries such as Spain and France, the amounts are considerably lower than what American universities charge. America, however, will sooner offer free guns and truck nuts than anything that might actually better the lives of its lesser-off citizenry. All right, well, time to do another one here. I'm starting to like the new sounds.
Fish, fish, there's always one, some long-faced, sour-belly son of a gun.
There's always some fish, some sour-belly fish, who's only one wish to flatten the fun.
All right, this from Upworthy. Vegetarian fast food. That's right, and people can't get enough of it. When you think about fast food, what comes to mind? Well, if you're like me, you probably start salivating as you imagine greasy burgers, gloriously deep-fried onion rings, and calorie-laden milkshakes. Yes, indeed. A new fast food restaurant in California, however, is aiming to broaden that image by introducing a vegetarian option. Andy and Rachel Berliner, The founders of Amy's Kitchen originally launched their line of vegetarian frozen, canned, and prepackaged foods in the grocery stores. You've probably seen Amy's organic, vegetarian, and vegan food in your local grocery store. After they found themselves frustrated with the vegetarian options available at the time, then the Berliners decided they wanted to make their mission one step further, envisioning a fast food restaurant where employees, who were paid a living wage plus health benefits, served vegetarian meals full of fresh local veggies. That idea became Amy's Drive-Thru, one of the first organic vegetarian drive-thru restaurants in the country. As of their opening in July, Amy's Drive-Thru has proven to be a ridiculous success. On opening day, Amy's served over 500 people, most of whom waited more than an hour in line just to order. And although they expected business to slow a bit in the following weeks, the demand has actually just continued to grow. Why this crazy business? Well, an Amy's spokesperson told Upworthy that it's all likely about pent-up demand. People love fast food, but they want variety, and Amy's is delivering. Not to mention, the food at Amy's drive-thru is getting rave reviews. Amy's serves organic veggie burgers, burritos, mac and cheese pizzas, salads, chili fries, and even milkshakes. And yes, you can choose from dairy or non-dairy options. Every menu item at Amy's can be made either gluten-free or vegan as well. The coffee, vegetables, and even the milk come from local farms. Our relationships with farmers and our knowledge of how to make delicious food on a large scale has really made this project possible. We've been able to keep the quality high and the prices reasonable, Amy Berliner said in a press release. So, here's to reimagining fast food in a new way and keeping low price points at the same time. A single burger at Amy's will only set you back $2.99, and a bowl of mac and cheese, $4.69. Fast food has become quite popular, largely because it's convenient, easily available, and affordable. But we're all ears for ideas as to how to add variety to that description. Amy's drive-thru seems to have it in the bag. Fair wages for employees, local farm support, low prices, and a sustainable business model. Their tables, chairs, and building materials are even upcycled and sustainable. So, who wants to take a trip to California with me? All right, well, guess what? It is about that time. Yes, time to bring the grinding gears of the Sacred Cow Verst House to a grinding halt. I promise that here, I'll always do my very best to make sure you get the best possible brain food for your precious time. Next time, we'll discuss naked baseball. Trust me, you don't want to play catcher. Make sure to tune in to the other podcasts and websites of the Milwaukee community, such as the Secular She Thinker on YouTube, the Craftcast, which is the official podcast of the Kenosha Racine Area Freethinkers, and the Mythicist Milwaukee Show. And don't forget that the Sacred Cow Wurst House also exists as a blog. You can read original material and various segments heard on this show at sacredcowwursthouse.blogspot.com. Opening music theme is by Universal Dice. Check them out at universaldice.com. And the closing atheistic music sampler, which you'll hear in a moment, is by Jill Sabuel. Until next time, this is Eric J. Hildeman reminding you to always make sexually suggestive noises whenever you eat chocolate. Good luck, thank you, and may the great Thunderbird go with you. So long, everybody.
Girl, loved the mass. I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus, I love my uniform. So did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age. Those things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the big taboo. Trying to feel something. I came back home, I won't let go. So much more. those quantum mystics. Something didn't feel right. The arguments weren't all that tight. And all those things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the